It's an interesting thing that life is full of choices, and sometimes it can feel like the choices are overwhelming. Other times it feels like there aren't enough choices in my life, that life feels repetitive. It feels as if it's just on a treadmill. And the joy, the spark, seems to have gone out of it. And yet, even that's a choice, really, to stay on that treadmill, to feel as if you're just doing the same things in and out. Even that can be a choice. And so, what are the choices we make? How do we make them? And how often are the choices we are making things that we end up regretting? And regret doesn't change in anything. I was once told it's a regret is one of those emotions that's like a rocking chair. You go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And what you end up doing is using up all your energy, but not going anywhere, not resting, but also not moving forward in life. So, are we meant to avoid regrets? It's a question we should be asking ourselves. And is it really possible to make the right choice every single time? It's not always possible, I think, because every choice has the potential to be wrong. But we can get better at thinking clearly, making wiser choices, and having fewer regrets. So I hope to share with you or explore with you until Maureen joins us. The choices we have made that were wrong or bad or unpleasant, how do we stop them defining us as individuals? And is it possible for me to leverage my regrets and make those choices work for me? So those are just some of the things that we can explore together this evening. For those of you who've joined later, we're still waiting for our speaker to join us. There must be a problem their end that they haven't been able to join us. So I'm going to refer back to we had a very interesting session this morning. For those of you who know us, we are a meditation organization primarily with who does lots of personal development as well as training for people to develop themselves. And in this morning's session, I hadn't realized it, but there was quite a lot of material that we explored that has something to do with regrets. So one of the first things that came up in our session was that it's okay to make a mistake. Isn't that interesting? Do you say to yourself, it's okay to make this mistake? Or are you a little more like me and a little more critical, and you the first thing you do is start telling yourself off, start berating yourself? And yet it's very, very important to realize that it's okay to make mistakes. There's a phrase that we were that gets taught. The first administrative head of the organization, she used to use this when she was training new teachers and new students. Actually, it was part of her training. And she used to say, if you've made a mistake, that's okay, because it's part of learning and growing. It's part of discovering who you are, what your capacity is, and how aligned you feel with your values and with your own innate sense of peace. And so it's not a problem. It's a learning process. Isn't that nice? Isn't it much more empowering to see the mistake that I've made or the choice that I've made that's led to a mistake, that it's fine. I can learn, I can grow. And the emphasis there is believing in yourself. It's actually turning around and saying, I believe and trust in myself. And so it's that learning. And if you're learning from the choices that you make, then there is no need for regret. There's no need to forgive yourself because you haven't been hard on yourself. You haven't been difficult with yourself. You know, you haven't put yourself in a box or stopped yourself growing. The problem lies if I'm making the same mistake again and again and again. It's when I don't learn from my mistakes that there's a problem. And that's when the mistake will become a regret because I've let myself down primarily. I may have hurt someone else, but I have definitely hurt myself. May have done something in which there is loss experience, whether it's a loss of time, a loss in a relationship, a loss in circumstances and opportunities, but I've lost trust in myself. And so taking the time to reflect and learn. I've made a mistake. I made a choice. I thought it was possibly a good choice. I later, on hindsight, discovered that it isn't. Okay, have I learned from it? Do I want to learn from it? And if I want to learn from it, what have I learned? How will I apply that insight to the next time I make a choice or I'm given choices? And the moment I start looking at it like that, it's almost like I'm preparing for the next time I'm offered a choice. The next time I'm offered the ability to grow and learn or express myself. And someone's just come onto the chat, so just one moment. Can you not hear me? Is this a Oh dear, a couple of people are saying they can't hear. Okay, so some can and some can't. I'm sorry if you can't. I shall endeavor to speak up. I hope that will help. Let's see if that helps. You can now. Wonderful. Thank you very much. So that's lesson number one. I guess that's when it comes to making choices, firstly, don't start from a point of I got it wrong last time. Let's clear that up for ourselves. Start with being very aware, present, and then working from there. Now, there's a really interesting thing for me in this whole process. If I go into wanting to make a choice or wanting to make a decision that I have an agenda, it's possible. In fact, it's likely that I won't then see the whole picture. My personal agenda will prevent me from seeing the whole picture, seeing all the choices that are available to me, and as a result, I'm likely to make a mistake or may choose wrong. Or not choose the best. At the very least, I won't have chosen the best outcome for myself and others. So the first step is to check, do I have an agenda? Now, there's an interesting thing. If, let's face it, we're humans and we will always have some form of desire or need or want. It's when those desires, needs, and wants overcome our ability to choose that we have a problem. That's the basic line. And so we In our meditation, we will take the time to learn to create space between the stimuli that's coming at us, whether it's through our eyes, our taste buds, what we're hearing, or a relationship, anything that's stimulating me. Create a little bit of space between the stimulus and yourself. Take a moment to remember what's important to you. And we really do start from that space. What is really important to me? My peace of mind is important to me. My happiness is important to me. My love, and to be able to express it and to receive it, to be able to accept it. It's important to me to be the individual and a unique being. It's important to me to be empowered and to be able to trust myself. If you've taken some time just to affirm that, and that's what we're doing in our meditation first thing in the morning. Our morning meditations are really making that time to affirm and realign with what is really important to me, so that it's there in my subconscious mind, feeding my conscious mind. And so that is really important. Sorry, excuse me. I think that may be our speaker. And nope, not our speaker. Sorry, I do have to keep it on. I'm going to take questions in a bit. I'm just going to run through a few points, and there's some comments coming in already. So there's that side of it. The more I'm aligned, the more I remind myself, the more I affirm that self, it kind of sits in my subconscious mind. And over a period of time of practicing this, it will start to feed my conscious mind. And if I've learned to create a little bit of space between what's stimulating my consciousness and my awareness, and allowing the best in me to feed my thought patterns, my mindsets, then what happens is that I'm creating some space. In creating that space, I'm taking the time to see the larger picture. The bigger the picture I see, and the more space there is for my values or my qualities, the more I'm going to be able to make choices that are positive for the self as well as for others. It becomes what they call, in the early turn of the century, everybody was talking about the win-win scenario. And it is then a win-win scenario, because whatever I'm doing is including other people's needs and feelings of worth as well. So in a sense, I am putting and making sure that I'm putting my health and well-being, particularly my well-being, my peace of mind, my sense of fulfillment, my sense of purpose, all of that, I'm making sure I'm taking care of that. And the nice thing is, and this is normal, if you treat yourself this way, you are guaranteed to treat other people that way too. Guaranteed. The next thing to understand is that I am an individual and I am unique. And again, this is a very important part of our psyche and our sense of well-being, knowing that I'm an individual. In which case, I have to follow my own path. In which case, the choices I make will be based on my path, not somebody else's. And it's really interesting. When you are sure of yourself, you don't have to be sure of the choice. You don't have to be sure of the circumstances. But when you are comfortable with yourself, when you've taken the time, to kind of be comfortable with yourself, then what happens is that you're comfortable with the path you're taking. And then you enjoy the journey, the ups and the downs. No path is straight and flat. Every path has its ups and its downs. Go for a walk in the park, and even if they say, oh, it's fairly flat, I can assure you, when you've got a broken leg and you're hobbling along, you realize that things aren't as flat as you thought they were. I recently fractured my ankle and I went for a walk, and I must say, I thought the path that I'd taken I knew well enough because it's a park I've often gone to. And it was only when I had the break that I realized it wasn't as flat as I thought it was. But when I was healthy, it was fine because I could balance, and with my balance, it was easy to move forward. And so balance comes with that sense of making sure that internally I'm following my own path. That's where my well-being begins to stem from. And as I follow my path, I realize that there are many others on this same path, but they're going at their speed. They're going just as I'm going at my speed. They're traveling in a manner that's comfortable for them, just as I'm traveling in a manner that is comfortable for me. And the more I realize that it's my path, then although I will be making choices, what I will also be doing is staying open to others. I'll be able to listen to advice, and it's a skill we seem to have lost a little bit. Listening to advice will often a thing that comes up with in conversations when I run sessions is that it often feels like criticism rather than seeing it as advice. And the nice thing about advice is you can look at it, you can pick it up, or you can put it down. And you can still be respectful because the advice that is being given by someone on their path. So I can respect it. But then I can choose if I want to use it, how much I want to use it, and you can move forward on that basis. Another part of living life without regrets, I guess, in this is my sense of humor. How often can I laugh with myself? Not at myself, but with myself. How often am I light with myself? And I can see how something that took perhaps hours of my time and has collapsed, as in a cake, can become something that we can share joy with. The fact that it's imperfect, the fact that it's collapsed, the fact that it's not presentable, but the fact that you can then still share it and experience joy in the sharing, experience laughter in the sharing. And I have a good friend who I've invited to speak in August, and she teaches laughter therapy and laughter, they call it laughter yoga in India. And one of the most important things she said to me is, you have to participate in the laugh. And I thought, well, yeah. And she said, no, really, if someone is laughing, join the laughter and watch yourself become lighter. The moment you become lighter, You don't hold the heaviness that comes with regret. You can let go of the heaviness and you can say, okay, it's happened. It's time to move on. It's time to try something different. If I don't join the laughter, I'm going to start rejecting myself. The choices I make really aren't necessarily life and death for most of us. Yeah, most of the time, most of the choices we make are not life and death choices. And yet, I can make choices in a way that I can learn and grow from, or I spend hours, minutes, hours, days, months where I regret. And it's because I'm holding on to the heaviness of it. So practice laughing. Really, honestly, have one conversation a day in which you laugh. I recently found that a lot of my conversations were, they're all, lots of them are to do with getting tasks done, meeting deadlines, etc., etc. And so what I started doing was just pausing and thinking of a joke. And it was originally a little bit, people found it a bit odd. They kind of stopped and looked at me and said, sorry. And I said, and I'd repeat the joke. And until there was a lightness that was created rather than an awkwardness. And I found that since I just paid a little bit of attention on making sure there's a little bit of laughter, then in my life, I found that people are calling me and we're having a good laugh. It's not one conversation or another. It's a rolling series of conversations. And I find that I often smile now in a conversation. The speaker this evening, when we were chatting a little earlier today, I was chatting with her and I couldn't see her. She couldn't see me. It was and on the phone, and yet I had a huge smile on my face just from chatting with her. And it wasn't anything deep and meaningful necessarily. It was just the pleasure I could hear in her voice of being at this amazing new retreat center and discovering how to get it to work and open the doors for people when they come out of lockdown. And that anticipation that she had, she was looking forward to it. And what it did was put a smile on my face. And so, okay, telling a joke is one way of bringing a smile. Being witty is another way in a conversation. But sometimes just taking the time to appreciate someone else's pleasure, anticipation, hope, and in allowing them to express that so that their journey, their path is affirmed for them, but also I enjoy that part of the journey. Isn't that an interesting way? I hadn't thought about it before this morning, but it certainly made me stop and think. One of the other things that comes up with us, because there's a group of us who study together each morning and meditate together. And what really catches me isn't so much the lesson, although I love the lesson and I'm always interested in what's coming up for myself. But what makes me bounce around internally and gets me excited is the curiosity I have of hearing how somebody else heard something. We've all studied the same text, the meditation text, and we've all read it and heard it. And yet how each person hears it is so different. And when they start unpicking it for me, I start to see whole new possibilities. And so it's, in a sense, it's intellectual curiosity. But actually, I think it's more curiosity from my heart, because it brings me closer to someone else. I understand them better. It opens my heart up. And the other thing that it does for me is it adds to my own experience and understanding. On my own, I may understand one thing, but when there's a few of us and we're chatting away, people are sharing their thoughts and their insights, it's like my path widens up, my understanding widens up, and it affects the choices I make. So far, I've talked a lot about just the choices that I'm making. I'm going to just stop and talk a little bit about regrets, because I know that I've had my good fair share of regrets in my life. And I'm just really aware that it's been an emotion that I've kind of carried around without realizing it, and how it's affected me. My regrets have, over time, I've realized that when I've made a choice and I'm living with the regret, I've stopped loving myself, I've stopped loving another, I've stopped loving life. It's become like an emotional block there that's coloring everything. When I've allowed that regret to when I've allowed a regret to continue with me, I found that it's also affected my inner capacity to deal with things. I don't feel as strong. I don't feel my equilibrium internally. And because I feel off kilter, I'm likely to literally fall off and make a mistake, which will affirm that I've got it wrong or I'm not capable. And then that whole cycle becomes a mindset again and again, where I'm hurting myself. And the problem with pain, at least with me, and it may not be the case for you, but I've seen that the problem with pain is that when I'm experiencing it, even when I don't want to, I'm giving someone else pain. Even when I don't want to. Isn't that sad that that's happened? The thing about regret is it also stops me from learning. And if I'm not learning, I stop trusting myself. And that was a real big lesson this morning when I was exploring for myself in the morning meditation and study, that if the moment there is regret, I stopped trusting myself. And if you second guess yourself, if you third guess yourself, if you fourth guess yourself, well, I know I've done it up to 10 times. Yes, no, yes, no. Yes, no. Wow. I've stopped enjoying the journey. I've stopped enjoying my life. I've stopped enjoying the company of those I'm working with, traveling with through life, or working with, or living with. And it's as if I'm beginning to suppress the joy that naturally exists in us when we share, when we grow, when we express. And so take the time to understand that all you're doing with regrets is punishing yourself. If you're not learning from it and you're just using it as a block emotion, there's also that regret that comes when we haven't been able to give love or accept love from somebody else and they've passed on. And at that point, there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of regret. And there's nothing you can do about it. In the last year, I've lost 5 major mentors in my life. All of them shaped me in one way or another. And literally, in the last year, I've lost 5 of them. And I guess the biggest regret I had was I hadn't spent more time with them. I didn't have regrets of having an argument with them or being at odds with them, but the biggest regret I had, and when it hit me, it really made me take a deep breath, was I hadn't spent more time with them. Even when they were sick, I hadn't spent more time with them. I cherished the time I'd had with them, but I wish I'd had more. And that I had to sit down and just take a deep breath and start to ask myself, what was the relationship really about? What did I go away with from that relationship? How has it shaped me? How has it made me as an individual richer internally? And for every single one of them, I've been able to say they've cherished me. I really feel fortunate that I had 5 mentors that cherished me and that switched my headspace from loss to what my life had become because of them. Might sound flippant, and I don't mean it to sound flippant in any way, because loss and grief are major experiences in our life, and they too shape us. But in everything, I've learned one lesson, and that is, what am I focusing on? Is it what I've lost? Is it what I've gained? Is it the opportunity that I was given or the opportunity that I lost? Is it a relationship that's challenged me? Or is it a relationship that challenged me and helped me grow and become the person I am today? Or a relationship that I unknowingly began to separate myself from, because it was a give and take of pain and I wasn't seeing further than the pain? These are all, I guess, things that I walked away from this morning's meditation session with, and it made me think in those directions. I don't know if any of this has been helpful, and I'm very sorry our speaker wasn't able to join us, but I can see there's a few comments and a few questions. So what I'll do is I'll just look at those and see if I can help in any way there. So let's start with this question. Oh, this question came in very early, so I'm very pleased that someone's very open so soon. The question is, how do I make better choices and decisions in my life if I have never been allowed to make those choices and decisions in the first place? I was born with a learning disability, and my father made a lot of those choices for me. He's passed away. I'm very sorry for your loss. in the last year he's passed away. And now it's time for me to make the choices and decisions. How do I know if I'm making the right choice and decision? Okay. I guess I'm going to, for me, that's a two-part question. It's one, how do I trust myself to make the right choice and decision? So how can I trust myself when I don't think I've got the experience? But the other one is, how do I know if I'm making the right choice or decision? And how do I know if I can trust myself? The only thing I know about trust or developing trust in myself, and I'm one of those slow learners, and I also had a learning disability, severe learning disability growing up, so I resonate with that. But how have I developed trust? I've developed trust by doing. And when I've found myself, when I've done something and I've fallen, it's okay. I've picked myself up and taken the next step. The problem isn't falling when you make a mistake or get things wrong. The emphasis is always on how do I get up? Do I get up and say, okay, well, that wasn't useful, and I now know that. There was a, they were trying to teach me how to do design work when I first started. Innerspace has been running for over 25 years now, and I was one of the original team members. And I suddenly found myself in front of a computer, and they said to me, "You've got to design the posters and the windows and the leaflets and the advertising and all of that." And I had no clue. Seriously, I knew how to type. I had a typewriter. But how on earth was I meant to do all this design work? I didn't know, and I wasn't sure. And here I am. I have the first inner space was on Regent Street, so not an inexpensive place. And none of us knew what we were doing at all. None of us. And yeah, I was left in charge of all of those things, amongst other things. That was a main part of my work. And so a friend brought his brother-in-law over from America, who was a designer and a very good one. And he came over to teach me how to do design work. And you have no idea how uncomfortable I was. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to get to achieve what I needed to achieve. I had no skill base at all and no insights in that direction. So you can imagine how uncomfortable it is. And so this chap would sit next to me and say, okay, he'd show me something. And being having learning disabilities and being a slow learner as I was or am, I think was more so, I found myself trying to copy him and not getting it at all. And he'd go and I'd make a mess of something, and we'd have to reboot the program. Not literally, we would have to reboot the program. That's how badly I messed up. And every time, all he did was look at me and smile at me and say, "Now that's another way not to do it. We've just learnt another way not to do it." I tell you, that guy put a smile on my face, and the moment I started smiling, I started learning. It was so heartwarming to be treated that way. And then I was reminded that Edison said that he learnt 100 ways. When he was asked why he had 100 failures before he made his first light bulb, his answer was, it wasn't 100 failures. It was 100 ways of learning how it won't work. So when I talk about being light, that's what I mean. And the moment you start seeing things from that perspective, you start to trust yourself because you are learning, you are growing. And isn't that far more important than being right? A question that I have often asked myself, and when I do advanced sessions, sometimes I have to ask that question to the advanced students too. Is it more important to be right, or is it more important to be happy? Just check in with that, and then you'll know. And if you're learning and growing, then you will be happy. No one can stop you from being happy if you're learning and growing. So that trust then is embedded in yourself. And so, how do you know if you're making the right choice or decision? I don't think any of us often can know, because there's too many moving parts in our lives. And no two people have the same two emotions and two different conversations. In which case, take that time to just enjoy the journey, trust yourself, learn and grow, and then very quickly you'll be able to trust the decisions you're making, the choices you're making, and get the best out of them. And the number of times I've done something and it's gone wrong, and yet the outcome was greater than I thought it could ever be. It's really heartening and humbling. And I think if there's one quality that you can benefit from in this journey of living life to the best of your ability, is have a little humility. Have a little bit of humility, and it'll take you a long way. Okay, next question. I hope that answers it. The next question. I do have a few regrets. How do I deal with the bad ones? For example, I made a mistake of working in care for 12 years, and I don't want to make the same mistake with the current job I'm in. Okay, well, we can't always pick the jobs we want, right? I know that in my working career, I've gone from computer programming to, believe it or not, but computer programming onto presentation, putting together presentations or fixing equipment, and doing troubleshooting in companies between employers and employees. I've had such a wide variety. And if anybody had said to me, "Oh, you're going to be doing this job and doing that," and doing that, I would have laughed at them, because I certainly didn't believe in that capacity. I had that capacity. What was more important to me, I guess, has been not the job that I'm doing, but whether I'm doing it the way I'd like to do it. Now, that doesn't mean, what does that mean? Let me rephrase that for you. It literally means that I found myself at one point living in a retreat center and working in this retreat center. And I found myself with cleaning these pots that literally were big enough to take a bath in. Seriously, you could have sat in it and had a little and given yourself a bath. And I found myself cleaning these at midnight, because we'd had such long days with big events and activities. And I found myself doing a job. I was exhausted. I was doing a job that wasn't delegated to me, but needed doing. And so there I was, having to do these jobs. And what I found myself doing was, okay, how do I make this enjoyable? And we can all be miserable. The whole team of us, five of us, were there, and we'd been going from 3:30 that morning. It was midnight now, and we'd been running, like running and running for this day event of 2,000 people. And you couldn't leave the pots dirty. You just couldn't. You'd be asking for the garden mice, the field mice, to come in and have a party. And we couldn't afford that. And so I thought, all right, look, here I am. I've got to do something. I can't be miserable. I just cannot be miserable. It goes against everything in me. And I started to sing. And anybody who's ever heard me sing will tell you I am seriously off key. And that's the nicest thing anybody has ever said about my singing. But suddenly, everybody just picked up on that energy. And I'm very glad to say that the others could sing. And we had a beautiful 2 hours of scrubbing pots but enjoying it. So whenever I start a task, even yesterday I was doing statistics for 2.5 hours. I had to take all the information of different things and start doing the stats on them. 2 hours of stats, gosh. And I thought, well, all right, what else can I do to make this pleasant? I'll play some music. I don't want to listen to a podcast or a class because it's going to distract me and I'll get annoyed. But I can play some music. I can take a break in between and go for a walk through the house because I'm working from home at the moment, and say hi to the other people who live in the house. I can do, and I gave myself four or five different things I could do. And believe it or not, the 2 hour job was done in an hour because I was enjoying myself. So I guess that's my approach to life generally, but it's certainly my approach to the work I do. I invariably do the jobs that I would never want to give anybody else, let alone do. I do jobs that I don't want to do, I don't like doing. And there's a lot of my workload like that. And yet, if you were to ask me about my work, I would tell you I love every minute of it. So it's not the task that becomes important, it's how I do it that is important to me. I hope that helps. Gosh, I really do. All right, next question. That's very kind. Somebody said that I had a great introduction and they hope I finish the talk. Well, me too. Okay, I have a problem of going back to my choices from many, many years back and asking myself, what if I choose another path or option? How do I break this habit? Can I break it? Wow. Yes. Oh my goodness. This is very interesting. This is very, very interesting. I guess it's second guessing yourself so completely, isn't it? Here's the exercise I would do to start changing the whole direction of my thinking. I would go back to the choices I've made from the many years ago and start looking at how they've shaped me in a positive way. What lessons I've learned, how I've grown as an individual, how it's made me more compassionate as an individual. And the moment you change the emphasis. What you're doing is telling your subconscious mind that life hasn't been bad for you. It's been wonderful. The person you are today is the person that you could get to like if you don't already like yourself, which I think you do, because you wouldn't be this open and honest. But in case there's a little element of I'm not comfortable internally, or I don't like myself as much as I'd like to, well, this is how you do it. It's taking and seeing how amazing things have become for you. And that was from the choices you made and the path or the options that you took. And yes, you can also, and this is a fun thing to do when you're in a good mindset, is go back and look at the situation and say, if I hadn't taken the left, but I'd taken the right, where would I have ended up? And it's fantasy, it's your imagination, but the nice thing about doing it in a positive mindset, when you have a positive mindset, is all you've done is create more positive thoughts for yourself, about yourself. And when I've done it, I've found that when I'm in a situation, some of those ideas filter through and I get to try them out. Things that I may not have thought about in that moment will come back to me and go, oh, I could try that here and see what happens. It's really quite a fun thing to do. So two things you do, two exercises there. One, go back and as an individual, look at how it's made you stronger. What are the specialities you have today? What are the skill bases? How you've developed compassion, consideration, all of that. The other is, when you're in a positive mindset, okay, if I chose another path, what would I have done? Just so that you can take some of those things the next time you make a set of choices and you can add to the variety in your life. Okay, next question. It isn't that there is no wrong decision in life. Correct, I agree with you. More how you make the best of the outcome. Yes, I agree with you. Thank you. You've put it very nicely. I sometimes wonder if my wrong decisions are due to my negative mindset. Well, yeah, certainly negative mindset. And even if I do something right, because I'm in a negative mindset, I will only see the negative outcome. It could have been better. Have you ever said that to yourself? Oh, it could have been better. I could have done better. Wow. That's me holding a negative mindset. I'm not seeing the beauty, that I'm not seeing the greatness. I'm not seeing how something has developed and become more than I could have thought it would have been. And that's just the mindset. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. And I'm going to say, it's not so much that it may be a wrong decision, but the negative mindset will only allow you to see a lesser or wrong result. Not really helpful and certainly not enjoyable. So yeah, if you find yourself, how do I know? It's the language I use. If I catch myself saying, oh, I could have done better, I know I started with a negative mindset. And so I will take a moment and just rephrase and relook at it so that I'm seeing something beautiful or positive or greater or different in a positive way. I'm just working that way. And so that my mindset changes. And if there's something for me to learn from that, I'm learning from it. I hope that answers that question. Okay. Because I'm older, I seem to have more regrets that are like a heavy load. When I was younger, I had a lot less. I'd like to go back to this lighter load. Yes, yes, I understand completely. And the lighter load is because, is it because, not it is because, but is it because when you're younger, you still are optimistic, you're still looking forward to doing, experiencing, seeing, exploring, being open to. If that's the case, it's so much easier to go back to having a lighter load, right? I just have to think myself younger. I know when I first, when my friend, a very close friend, turned 30, I told her, I was told, oh, she's just turned 20. She's not turned 30, she's turned 20. And I've heard people say, when you're 60, you're actually 40, you know. Generally, we are now, at least in the West, we're a little more positive about getting older. We look forward to it in the sense that, well, when we retire, we can travel. When we do this, when I have a bit more time, I'm going to redesign the garden when I have more. And lots of people did during the pandemic, right? They got their homes sorted, the things that they've been thinking, I've got to fix, I've got to do, and never got round to. They really did do it, and they enjoyed doing it, and they're enjoying the result of it this year. Well, that's what it's about for me. It's living younger here, which means that I've always believed that in the dreams that I create. And if I've lived the dreams that I wanted earlier, I go ahead and make more. There's no monopoly on the dreams you can have for yourself or for life. There's no monopoly on optimism. There's no monopoly in the world for being able to be open and look forward to things. Just flip it to that, and you'll find that the heavy load goes. Because you're looking, living in the moment and looking at the future. There was a phrase I was told years and years ago. I don't remember who told it to me, but I've loved it. Live your life in such a way that you enjoy it now, but when you look back at it, you get to enjoy your life a second time. And I guess that's left somewhere in my subconscious, it's left that impression on me that if I can't enjoy my life now, 5 years from now, 5 months from now, 5 minutes from now, I'm going to look back and not enjoy it. And so let me see if there's something I can switch and make more positive in my mindset today. Gosh, there are loads of questions today. Thank you. I don't know if it's because I've sown loads of confusion or if I've generated sparks going on, but let's explore this new one. Oh, gosh. Hello, I am a psychotherapist, a counselor. Wow, we've got somebody who does know a lot about this. So let's have a look at this question. Many people regret choosing a life partner who abused them emotionally or in other ways and regret losing years of their life. And so losing the opportunity to find a better partner with fewer singles to get to know when older. Are there any thoughts on this, please? Yeah, being in the wrong relationship that has abused me and living a life and allowing it to continue. Wow, yeah, that is tough. I can, yeah, I empathize with sympathize with that completely. There are two things there. Again, I'm going to break it down to two things. One, I've lost the opportunity to find a better partner for the present and the future. So that's one side of it. And the other, the regret of having stayed in a relationship that was so harmful. Okay. I'm going to say this. You, whoever it is that was in that relationship and has moved out of that relationship, I think the first thing that needs to be done is to celebrate the strength, the courage, and the fact that the person has kept hope. It might feel deeply buried inside, but buried that hope. Sorry, that kept that hope in their life that they've stepped away from an abusive relationship. For me, the first thing is to celebrate that and affirm that. When you do that, I'm hoping that when a person does that, I'm hoping, and I haven't been in this experience, so I can't guarantee, but I'm going to say, I believe that this is possible. When you've celebrated, when you've affirmed, when you've kind of unburied that hope that's kept you going as an individual, and you've really celebrated it. The fact that you are singing that strength and feeling that glow inside you, I have a feeling that that will attract other people into your life. It may not be a single partner that you were hoping for, but it may be an amazing group of friends. And who knows, it may be that partner. But I do know that if you walk into a relationship where there's a huge hole in you, you are more likely to feel disappointed in your life and with yourself or with others. Yeah, you got yourself into a pickle by picking, and I use the word pickle when I should say you walked into a horrible relationship. But the fact that you came out of it is the most important thing. And once that internal glow begins, others will come, want to be with you. I'm thinking of Daddy Janky. She passed away last year, one of my mentors. And I traveled the world with her as a translator. And one of the things that really struck me was how people were drawn to her. This little old lady in a little white sari, with nothing much on her other than her serene smile. And the fact that she'd look you in the eyes, and the fact that she had this inner glow. And whether it was a porter at the airport, whether it was a shoeshine boy in the Philippines, whether it was the president of a country, it didn't matter. Didn't matter who she was with, they all felt that warmth from her. And she just drew people to her like honey draws bees. And it wasn't because she was witty, it wasn't because she was funny, it wasn't because of anything other than that warm glow of love that she had within herself. So I've seen that, and I believe that if you create and celebrate your life and celebrate your qualities, those are the going to that's going to create that inner glow that will draw people. So that I can guarantee. I hope that answers that question. Ah, there's a second one. Some people struggle with regret even more. So if in, some people struggle with regret even more so if they made a choice, which leads to many people rejecting them for the rest of their lives. Any thoughts? Oh my goodness. Yes. You've made a choice and you've been rejected. Oh boy, is that awful? Yes, it's an awful experience being rejected. And there's two parts on it, I guess. One part is looking at it and checking, are you being rejected because people wanted to or expected you to do things their way or to please them? In which case, if they rejected you over that, okay. Remember, it's your path, not theirs. You're not meant to be walking their path. You're meant to be walking your path. The second part is you've made a choice and you regret it because people reject you because you've hurt them in some way. Go back and say sorry. Genuinely, go back and say you're sorry. I have no idea what's going on with that phone. I apologize. Go back and say you're sorry. Go back and ask how you can build the bridge, where you can start from again. If you really want that relationship to work, or relationships to work, then it's up to you to make that first step. At least it has been in my life when I've hurt someone. I've actually gone out of my way to ask them, what would it take? And if they say nothing, because there's no chance, then here's the secret that my spiritual practice, my meditation practice has taught me. Whenever you think of those people, think of them with love. Think of them with respect. Think of them with compassion. Cherish them. Here and here. And then leave it at that. And I have no scientific proof on this one because I've never measured it in a scientific manner. But I can tell you this, any relationship that has worked for me, if I've said I'm sorry, if I've gone and asked how to mend it, to rebuild the bridge, and if even after that, it feels like there's a blockade, nothing's moving. I've recreated such love and warmth and respect here and here. And somehow it's touched the other person somewhere. It may take a while because the hurt's been sitting there a while. So it may take a while, but I guarantee two things will happen. Somewhere along the line, your relationship will start to rebuild. And instead of spending all your energy on regret and pain and hurt, you've used your energy on love, on respect. With trust and hope, and you will have built other relationships. While this one is here, these ones are healing, the ones that cause hurt are healing, you will still be creating other relationships that have a solid, good foundation. So all you're doing is enriching your life as you go along. But never ever. If a relationship means something to you, never ever give up on it. If you can't do anything physically, if you can't do anything verbally, you can do something with your mind and your heart. So never ever give up. That's something that I have really learnt and benefited from. I'm actually going to pause and say thank you so much for sticking with me this evening and joining the talk. I hope that it's something that you're walking away with that's beneficial.